5 minutes now after 12 o'clock, and on the last Thursday of a month, I have the privilege and the pleasure of having two really wonderful guys in the studio, one of which is on a mission trip, and that's Chris White, but Matt McCullough.
No, it's a vacation. He's down there in that 120-degree heat building orphanages having a great time.
What place is he in?
He's down in Tijuana.
Tijuana? Yeah. Oh, well, all right. That's a good mission field down there. All right, well, God bless Chris as he's down there. But, Matt, you were brave enough to put together a program on your own, and it's a good one. Science and the Church.
No. Heck yeah. Even if I feel like a pickup with a flat tire, without my old buddy here to back me up, we're going to do the best we can. You know, Pat, we've actually touched on this before. We've done programs on the Scopes Monkey Trial. And
yes.
Programs on Galileo.
Yeah.
And so, you know, we've kind of touched on the whole idea of the conflict between science and religion, but we never really fleshed it out. And I thought, you know, that would make a great program, is just to go ahead and really run through the history of the relationship between science and the church and how things kind of got out of hand, if at all they did, and why. Because, everybody's pretty familiar with the general picture that the school textbooks paint. You know, the evil church, you know, repressing truth and suppressing the brave patriots and pioneers of science, you know, like Galileo and, you know, berating Columbus and telling him the earth is flat. And, you know, everybody remembers, you know, the Pope excommunicating Halley's Comet in 1456 and, you know, the brave young high school biology teacher John Scopes, you know, being persecuted for teaching evolution. What they don't realize is that none of that happened.
None of that stuff, huh?
That is it's an utter fabrication. All of those things, the Galileo story, as we told in our radio program earlier, has a kernel of truth, but it has nothing whatsoever to do with the persecution of science by the church.
But this is the spin that we get in the text.
Oh, my goodness. It's really bad, yeah. But all of these stories are, well, we'll be touching on them. But first, I wanted to talk about, you know, science in general. You know, we look around at the history of the cultures of the world, and we see, well, golly, not many cultures have come up with, an ongoing progress of science. And we're wondering, well, why is that? The early Greeks had Plato and Aristotle, Pythagoras, Ptolemy, and Galen, and yet they never really got off the ground with that. They kind of degenerated into a dark age, a Greek dark age, and then were taken over by Rome.
Right.
And, why not China? I mean, there is a brilliant people in a very stable culture. And, they did some fireworks and gunpowder.
Gunpowder,
the printing press, and never even did anything with that. I mean, they pretty much stayed the same for 2,000 years.
How many Chinese novels have you read?
I have to admit.
they're up to five or six now, I think.
Well, it could be. Well, and Islam. I have a period that was characterized as a golden age in the 9th and 10th centuries. But, you know, frankly, that was actually coinciding with the fact that they gathered a bunch of loot from the people they conquered in the Mediterranean basin and elsewhere.
And what did they come up with? Algebra.
Oh, bless their hearts. Well, they had some good contributions, but again, it just petered out. 200 years, and that was the end of it. No more progress. They slid into really, bad oppression of their people and corrupt forms of government. I mean, well, India, Africa, the Americas, yet any of these places, why haven't any of these cultures or areas produced, an ongoing scientific culture? And the fact is, well, it's not, you know, it can't possibly be genetic superiority. I mean, you know, Western civilization is actually a mixture of a lot of different races, and so that question is out the window. And so we have to look at some of the things that are unique about Western culture. Well, one of them is Christianity, and that perhaps is the foundational capstone of really science and all progress in science for the last 2,000 years. Why does Christianity make it different? Well, for one thing, and probably the biggest thing, it separates God, the Creator, from the creation. And so the pagan animistic taboos against investigating, you know, the tree and the spirit of life in the tree and the, you know, the sacred groves and the pools and the mountains, all of a sudden these things are no longer things that have independent spirits in and of themselves, like the animistic religions. They're simply manifestation of God's creation, and it's okay for us to investigate them. We're not violating anything. We're not being blasphemous by investigating creation. Another is that Christians rejected the pagan notion of fate, that every man's fate was written in the stars, and that the great wheel of life just goes round and round and nothing new happens. There's no progress towards any sort of resolution or historical destination, and that is not biblical. And the Christian scientists, armed with a biblical view of the world, saw history as a linear, progressive thing. And they also saw the universe as a coherent, rational place. You know, God was a coherent, rational creator, and there must be real, live laws and principles that operate here that we can detect, that we can see and understand, so we can get a better grasp of how creation works.
Okay, well, why would... that's an interesting thing. I can see how that works in Christianity, but if you just have the pagan notion of fate, for instance, why would that put a damper on science?
Well, maybe today you boil water and it boils at... 212 degrees centigrade, and tomorrow it'll boil at 75 degrees centigrade. If the gods are feeling fractious and contrary, they may change that. There's no reason to expect that you're going to get the same result every time.
Okay, so it's not a rational universe at all.
Right. There are no rules
capricious
that you can identify.
Gods.
Absolutely. Okay. Absolutely. And, well, what this really arms the Christian scientist with is what we call deductive reasoning. And that is reasoning... Now, bear with me here. I won't get too crazy. Deductive reasoning is basically reasoning from a general idea down to the particulars. It's like starting with a pig jigsaw puzzle. Mm-hmm. You know, you take off the lid off the box and you set it up on the dining room table there, and you have an idea of what all these pieces you're trying to make. When you see an edge piece or a red piece, you look at the picture and you say, "Oh, I know where that goes. That goes over here." Well, what the pagans and actually modern science do is called inductive reasoning. Mm. Aristotle actually started it off, and he reasoned that you should be able to infer from all of the particular details what the general picture is. And again, modern science likes this, but it has really done some damage. And it's sort of like, again, not only not having a picture of your puzzle pieces of what they're eventually going to form, it's not even knowing how many puzzle pieces you've got or where they are.
Wow.
It's pretty bizarre. But all through the Middle Ages, the groundwork is being laid for the scientific revolution, because Christians, men and women, have this, if you will, predisposing viewpoint. They think the world is supposed to make sense. And so they go out looking for rules that tell them that it does make sense. And by golly, it does. The work of Augustine contributed to this. Thomas Aquinas, Albert Magnus, a lot of scholars really built some heavy groundwork for the scientific revolution that occurred in 1500 to 1700. And that's when it really got going. That's when you get guys like Copernicus, figures out a new method, a new model for the universe and the solar system. You get Andrew Vesalius, called the father of anatomy, who, for the first time in 1500 years, actually dissects a body to find out what's inside. Whereas before, doctors had just, part of the old Aristotelian science was you didn't actually touch anything or examine anything. You just kind of looked at it and had thoughts about it.
Drew your inferences.
Yeah, we paid some price for Aristotle a couple times. You had Johannes Kepler, who actually is the guy that inspired Galileo to go after Copernicus's thoughts. He was... just the father of astronomy, if you will, in the modern sense. William Harvey, you could call the father of medicine, pioneered in the late 1600s, pioneered a lot of medical techniques that we use today. You got Blaise Pascal, one of our favorite guys, actually invented, you could say, the computer, built the first calculator, invented probability with it, the science of probability. Got Robert Boyle, that everybody's heard of, the father of chemistry. Got Anton van Leeuwenhoek, the father of microbiology. And got Isaac Newton, arguably the single most intelligent human being in the history of the human race. Now, what's going on is all of these guys are making record-breaking, earth-shattering discoveries, new concepts, putting together natural philosophy in a way that is just blowing people's minds for 200 years. Mm-hmm. And all of them, to a man, were stout Christians. I mean, they were not nominal Christians. These were guys who really, they had strength of faith is what kept them going while they were while they were pursuing all these experiments.
So they were looking for the rational, orderly universe. They were making measurements, and they could...
They knew God had rules.
Yeah.
And they knew they would find him. They weren't afraid of pursuing the truth wherever it went because they knew God would be what they would find at the end. Mm-hmm. Well, a funny thing happened, I don't know, about as the 1700s dawned, you have something growing up which we've all heard of, the Age of Enlightenment.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay, some of the predisposing conditions here are, okay, everybody's pretty tired of the fighting that has been going on with the Reformation for 150 years. And that's certainly understandable. But what also has happened is that people have gotten a little cocky and confident about the progress of science. Now they're starting to think, well, you know, we really, if we understand these rules, we really don't need God. I mean, he may have set things in motion, but, you know, obviously with the power of reason mm-hmm. and inductive reasoning, we're perfectly okay to move off on our own steam. And really, this picked up momentum, this way of thinking. Gosh, as a matter of fact, in the middle of the 1700s, 1750, the French philosophers, they were called the philosophes, that's guys like Voltaire and everything, who really hated the church. They had no bones about it. That was their agenda. They published what was called l'Encyclopédie, mm-hmm. and it was a collection of scientific knowledge that was incredibly, well, we'll just say slanted. It was, these guys had no bones about their agenda, and they were going to draw as bad a picture of the church as they possibly could, and they did. As a matter of fact, they told the Galileo story that we're familiar with today.
Oh, that's where that came from, huh?
Where he was brutalized by the Inquisition and tortured and, you know, thrown into prison, none of which happened.
So they kind of made that up, huh?
They just made that up because it made the church look bad, and that was enough for them. They were happy with that. Well, it wasn't long after that that an old American author favorite, Washington Irving, the guy that did Legend of Sleepy Hollow and yeah. Rip Van Winkle. I won't go into a lot of detail about Washington, but bless his soul. He wrote a 4-volume biography of Christopher Columbus, which had very little connection to reality. And one of the things in that was a scene where Christopher is braced by the church officials who are telling him what a fool he is. He's going to drop off the face of the earth. You know, he's going to be consumed by monsters. Well, of course, this absolutely never happened. Anyone with a second grade education or above in the world of that time knew that the earth was round. As a matter of fact, the only time church officials confronted Columbus was to tell him, you know, Chris, your calculations are really bad here. The earth is quite a bit bigger than you're thinking it is. He thought he was going to go to China by sailing across the Pacific, and they were telling him, nah, I don't think so. And they were right. He bumped into the Americas instead of making it to China. So, gosh, by then, now we're looking at, we're coming up on the time of the American Civil War. This is when Charles Darwin presents his theories. So we have these, and the church is understandably upset by that. For one, Darwin doesn't have any good evidence. He mm-hmm. really doesn't. He's got the Galapagos stuff and, you know, a couple of things. The spotted moth thing that we've all seen in the high school textbooks,
which
of course,
was proved to be a hoax.
That was a hoax.
They glued him on there to prove their...
And to this day, we haven't found... There's no fossil evidence. I mean, there should be enough fossil evidence to of transitional forms, and there is not. But we'll get back to that. Anyway, they objected to that was such a major sea change in the sciences without any evidence. As a matter of fact, a lot of secular scientists agreed. Darwin even backed off after his original publication. But by then, it was too late. The social scientists had got a hold of this idea of survival of the fittest, and they were off and running. You know, Friedrich Nietzsche and some of the philosophers, which eventually developed into the eugenics program of sterilization of inferior genetic types, and which Adolf Hitler took to its logical conclusion in his little game that he played. So all through the 1800s, you got this stuff going on. Even after the Civil War, you've got... you've got published by a physiologist named John Draper a book called The History of the Conflict Between Science and Religion.
Uh-huh.
And, of course, he sticks in the story about Columbus, you know, being harassed by the church officials. Well, this is a pretty big deal. This book actually got quite a bit of wide circulation and was read a lot. And within 10 years, the Columbus story, the fictitious Columbus story, was showing up in the school textbooks. by 1900, it was standard fare in the textbooks. Well, only 6 years after Draper published this, well, we got another wacko named Andrew Dixon White. And you should remember that name. Andrew Dixon White published a similar book called The History of Warfare. Not the history of conflict, the history of warfare between science mm-hmm. and theology in the history of Christendom. And basically, he was a historian, Dixon White, and he was also president of Cornell University, and tried to get religion out of the curriculum at the university. And, you know, some of the guys in the churches in town and on the board of trustees were a little upset by that, and they told him so. And he really got angry about that. And he decided, by golly, I'm going to show them. And so he published this book. He published, well, it not only contained the Columbus story, it contained a complete fabrication of the old French encyclopedia Galileo story.
Mm-hmm.
He misquotes Calvin to make his case. Just frankly, the guy was a liar and a poor scholar. And his book has done more damage than almost any other single publication. People still quote it today. I was just reading a couple of modern philosophy textbooks, and he's still quoted.
Really?
He's still treated as an authority, even though his work is dreck. So it's a little bizarre, you know, when you start examining the roots that lay at the basis of some of our assumptions of this conflict between science and religion, it bears no fruit at all. It's not real at all.
But he had the academic ear, and that seems to sort of
that's
perpetuate
all it takes.
Itself.
Well, you know, and that's the thing. If you repeat a lie often enough mm-hmm. and stick it in enough magazines and put it on enough TV programs, pretty soon people get used to the idea and they start thinking in that way. By 1900, it was actually pretty fashionable to start thinking that there was serious problems between the church, and if you were a good Christian, you really couldn't be a scientific modern person.
Mm-hmm.
And then in 1925, of course, you had the Scopes monkey trial,
oh, yeah.
And which was just an ACLU setup. And then H.L. Mencken, the old bitter Mencken, the journalist, did a send-up of that for the newspapers that had the whole country convinced that these wacko evangelists are crucifying poor, honest, hard-working biology high school teachers, which is just the way it's portrayed in Inherit the Wind, a play that was written in 1950 and was then again put on film in 1960. Well, if you ever see that film, and it's a great film, I mean, it gets your emotions all stirred up. Those darn fundamentalists, don't they know nothing? And the fact is that A to Z, it's almost a complete fabrication. Most everything that happens in that film didn't happen in the courtroom. He's even got, whenever there's a good line, he takes it away from the person that says it and gives it to the Clarence Darrow character.
Yeah, well, this is a guy with an agenda.
Oh, my.
White there. And me, the agenda is, it's like you were mentioning with Darwin, you know. I mean... He even admitted that, yeah, there's flaws. This is just a theory, and if we don't find the fossil evidence, it's not going to be backed up. Well, scientists never glommed on to this idea as much as the philosophers did.
Amen.
You know?
Boy, Pat, that is right on the money. And as a matter of fact, you can see that in the 1800s, they're tearing down the church, they're also propagandizing modern science. I mean, they're so excited by it. I had the novels of H.G. Wells. I mean, he particularly ignored a lot of the stuff out of the Dickens novels, the squalor of mm-hmm. the slums and the injustice and oppression that was going on. Just painted this wonderful picture of how science is going to fix everything and it's going to be good.
Oh, yeah, we had the... progressivists,
mm-hmm.
right? Life is just always
yeah.
getting better.
T.H. Huxley, George Bernard Shaw. I mean, even today it still exists where you have apologists for this way of thinking. I mean, Bertrand Russell, Carl Sagan, Patrick Moore, Richard Dawkins, all of these guys have a real one-sided view of this and continue to spout the lies that Andrew Dixon White told a century ago. I mean, it's very sad. And it makes you wonder, well, why is this going on? And one of the reasons it's going on is that science has not done too well in the 20th century. Starting with World War I kind of popped the bubble for everybody.
Yeah.
You know, and it's just been getting worse since then. I got a little quote here I'd actually like to read from a book I'm going to mention. Even as science triumphed, the hope that it would inevitably bring progress faded. An age that has seen more than 80 million people killed in wars, has polluted its environment, that starves two-thirds of its population in order to make the remainder obese, and is daily destroying numerous species of plants and animals, seems less the embodiment of progress than it once did. But myths can bring reassurance in the face of such adversity, and the myth of the warfare between science and religion diverts attention from these failures of the modern hope and comforts us that it was even worse when the evil church used to burn witches and persecuted Galileo. I mean,
wow.
God love these guys. You know, and I need to be clear here. These are not the real scientists. As a matter of fact, a recent Gallup poll discovered that 40% of professors believe in a God who answers prayer. As a matter of fact, what's going on right now in science is pretty interesting. You're really seeing a resurgence of repudiation of evolution. A lot of the old the Darwinian thinking is going out the window because it just doesn't apply and it does not have any evidence to back it up. You're seeing a lot of the intelligent design going on,
yes.
the theory of intelligent design. And this is not from Christian scientists. I mean, these are secular PhDs and
right.
astrophysicists and everybody. It's just this is what the evidence is showing us. But the fact is, if you're waiting to hear this from Peter Jennings or a National Geographic special, you're going to wait a long time because only the professionals are there at this point. You know, the culture still exhibits it's dominated by evolutionary thinking.
Sure.
Ask, 10 people on the street, and they're going to say, oh, yeah, I believe in evolution. And they couldn't defend that argument, bless their hearts, if their life depended on it.
But we know that scientists can, and so I don't have to think about it.
Yeah, there it is, by golly. And the fact is, the scientists can't, and most of the scientists are deserting that theory like rats from a sinking ship. It's just a very interesting shift that's going on right now. It's going to be really interesting to watch where it goes in the next 10 or 20 years, you know, especially with the public schools kind of caving in and things going south in that way. But for us, the application is that, you know what, Christianity kind of buried its head in the sand in the 20th century.
Seems to have. Where were the apologists? Why?
Yeah. We got scared. We really thought that kind of we couldn't reconcile science with faith. And you know what? All of history teaches us differently. You know, God is not afraid. He is the ultimate scientist, and whatever reality shows is gonna be evidence for God's sovereignty and his creation. Don't be afraid, Christians. Get out there. Take a class. Read a book. Golly, you know, you need to be equipped to answer some of these guys because they're lying to you, and you need to know that.
Well, I appreciate that, Matt. I read a book recently about Isaac Newton. Fascinating individual. Oh, you got a couple of books to show there. But anyway, no, he loved the Lord, and it was his delight to discover the order in the universe.
Amen.
You know, and it was more glory to God when he came up with fluxions, and it was more glory to God when he discovered the, three laws of the universe and the concepts of gravity and all of this. And, man, it was... And it would have broken his heart to know that 100 years later, these French philosophers were taking his work and saying, well, Isaac Newton has explained the whole world for us anyway, so obviously God's not part of that, and so anyway, we don't need him.
We need to be on our guard against these things. We need to look at these things and be as cunning as serpents as well as innocent mm-hmm. as doves. Well, I do have a couple books I'd love to recommend.
Good.
For somebody on this, if you're looking to get some basic information about this mess, one great book by Philip Sampson is called Six Modern Myths About Christianity and Western Civilization. And I think normally Evangel does carry this, and it can certainly be ordered from any bookstore. Six Modern Myths by Philip Sampson, Christianity on Trial. These are arguments against anti-religious bigotry. This is by Vincent Carroll and David Shiflett. Christianity mm-hmm. on Trial. Those are great ones to get started with.
Well, I appreciate that, and an exceptional job. And fascinating. You're a natural-born lecturer and teacher, and indeed, Matt does teach at Pacific Bible College, and we've done some church history classes together, and You ought to teach an apologetics class now, by golly. Well, anyway, Matt McAuliffe is on staff at Trail Christian Fellowship. He comes in once a month here on the Daily Connection, generally with Chris White, and we usually look at some aspect of church history. We were originally scheduled to do the development of liberal theology, mm-hmm. which is really a fascinating kind of cultural look, and science plays a part in that, particularly in the 19th century. So, but we couldn't have done that program without Chris, who...
He would have killed us.
Yeah, yeah. So, anyway, we'll wait for that, and I'm sure Chris will be with us next time. Right now, it's 31 minutes after 12 o'clock, and How to Manage Your Money's coming up in just a moment.
Christians often claim that